This is the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. This episode is hosted by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Nathan Bryant, and his ministry colleague, Bart Blair.
Welcome to episode number 13 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair, the guy with really bad allergies today, and I am joined by my podcasting co-host and ministry partner, the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Mr. Nathan Bryant. Hello, Nathan. Welcome to my podcast show and my allergy day.
Hey, well, Bart's great to be here. Hope you get through it, brother.
Yes, so. I hope so too. I told you before we started recording, I've been popping Claritin like crazy. At the time that we were recording this, everything in my neighborhood is in bloom. And, and my wife is responsible for a significant amount of that. She's planted about half the flowers in our neighborhood, not just in our yard, but she's helping neighbors plant flowers.
She wants to win yard of the month.
That is true. Maybe if she chokes everybody out on pollen, we'll win. I don't know. Anyway, that's not why we're recording this podcast episode today. We are recording a podcast episode because we want to help churches that are going through a season of transition, renewal, revitalization, find the healthiest way forward. And if you've been tuned into the podcast over the course of the last few months, you've heard us talk through our five big rocks of revitalization. And if you haven't listened to those episodes, I would encourage you to go back and do that, because we're going to be riffing off of some stuff that we've talked about in previous episodes in this particular episode. Also want to remind you to make sure that you subscribe wherever you're listening so that you don't miss the future episodes that we release of this podcast. But one of the very first topics that we tackled on the Revitalize My Church podcast is the topic of unity and the importance of unity when it comes to revitalization. Nathan, why don't you give us a quick little recap on the importance of unity in a church revitalization situation?
There is nothing more important. In fact, you know, I say you can't move forward without unity. It's impossible, because, you know, Jesus says himself, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And as we're trying to navigate the process of revitalization, unity is really important. And it's really important to get unity at the top and work your way from the top down. We'll talk about that more in this podcast, but unifying the church is really difficult if the leaders are divided. And that is where usually, not always, but a lot of the times when we're working with churches, there's unity division at the top level of leadership, but also in the middle level of leadership. And it's really tricky to get everybody to move forward if someone who has a significant amount of influence is not with you. That causes lots of problems in the church.
Right. So you alluded to this in the first episode of this podcast series when we were talking explicitly about the topic of unity, about the best way to communicate vision, the best way to implement change, and the way that you go about communicating those things within the context of the congregation. Now, there's going to be some variation in the way that you do this. So we're going to ask you to just contextualize as we're talking through this, because if your church has 10 or 12 people in it, that's going to be very different than going through this if your church has like 110 people in it. Like it right. will be a very, very different scenario. One of the strategies that we encourage churches to employ when they're rolling out any kind of new vision, new direction, new language, or new strategies is to use it's a commonly used phrase. It's called cascading communication. And it's basically addressing the right people in the right timing, in the right process. Nathan, why don't you talk through what we would typically coach a church through if they were going to be communicating some sort of change and trying to maintain unity in that process?
Yeah. Well, big thing is start, like I often see it as concentric circles. So you have, like, let's say you got three concentric circles, one in the middle, one medium one, and one which include everybody. And that center circle would be your core leadership team. That's the first group that needs to be communicated to, obviously. But what typically happens is that core leadership team, we will communicate to them, but we don't get agreement before we go out. And that's where you have challenge. So I'm very big on trying to get the information and the plan and the ideas unified before we start talking to them to the next level. So the first level needs to be communicated to, not just communicated to, but that there's agreement and there's process and they've worked it through. And oftentimes the guy will, the leader will try to talk to everybody. Hey, I let everybody know, well, that's not actually good enough. we need to make sure that the leaders are actually good. And of course, in the church context, we really want that elder team or leadership team to decide on that direction or the decisions that we're making. And it's not just us, you know, edicting it down the food chain, but there actually is buy-in and they understand it and they're behind it and they support it. So that's a really big idea. And so once we get that core leadership team to agree, then we want to go to that second group, that mid-level leaders. And that's the one that's actually usually bypassed because the pastor and the elders will go on a retreat. They come up with this amazing plan. Oh, they'll be working on it for months until they finally get their plan and their ideas all figured out for the year. And they come back to the congregation and communicate, you know, this amazing plan or ideas that they want to execute on. And the mid-level leaders that are sitting in the room usually can be very upset because they weren't included in the conversation. They weren't let to know first. They weren't part of the process. And if there's things that are significant changes that are taking place to the overall way that the church is operated or the vision or the directions or the goals that are being made, it can be really, really hard on them. And if they have influence, it's a big deal. So, for instance, you know, you have the person who's been overseeing the Sunday school department for the last 25 years of the church sitting in the room, and they're talking about all the things they're going to do with the Sunday school program from up top, and this person hasn't even been engaged in the conversation. And while she may have her, she may be quite upset about the whole situation. The other thing that happens that I think that's really important, and I think we mentioned it when we were talking about unity the first time, is that these key leadership leaders have influence. And when you're talking to the congregation as a whole, what's going to actually drive the way forward for people to have buy-in and agreement is that they see that the people they know and trust actually like what's being said, and they agree with it. So when you're talking, again, you have this great vision about what you're doing in Sunday school, and the Sunday school teacher has not, the leader of this person hasn't had a chance to actually process that and agree with it. She may be fine with it, but it's the first time hearing it. Her response to that is going to be really big because everybody in the room is going to look over to her or him, whoever is leading that, and say, oh, how are they responding to that information? Because if they don't like it, why would we want to like it? Because they're the ones who have the influence there. So it's really, really critical for leaders to start with the core, with the leadership core, and then bring it to that second level of leaders. And it's not about, hey, I gave them an announcement and communicated to them about all that's going to go on, and now they're good with it. No, if you really want buy-in and ownership, you need to allow people to hear it, process it, ask questions, and then decide. And so oftentimes when we're working with churches, you know, and that's arduous, slow process, which guys, you know, want to move faster than that. But if you want unity and you want ownership, you got to move a little bit slower, but you need to have some strategic process to do that. So I always encourage guys to plan on 3 meetings with each group. You may only need 2, but at least 2, because you have different types of people. And I think that's a big conversation too, Bart, is you have some people who are going to say yes to whatever you say because they love you and they think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, and whatever you're going to come up with, they're for, right? So they're fine. Then you have other people who they like anything new. So if as long as it's something new, they're for it. And you have other people who have to process stuff and it takes time for them to understand even what you said. They have to read it and think about it. And it's really 2 days later whether they've got their mind made up on what's going to happen. So, and you have, of course, you always have breaks people who, it doesn't matter what you say, they're saying no to. That's going to happen. But so you need to be ready to give process to each stage, both with the core leadership team, with the mid-level leadership team, and with the actual congregation, the full congregation. Give them time to process what you're trying to say and give them time to buy in to the concept. But with that cascading leadership model, what happens is when you have that core leadership team saying, we all agree and stand for this and we're all excited about it, man, when you get to that second level of leaders, usually there's a good chunk of those that are already part of that group anyway. they're like, wow, they're excited about it. And if that second level of leaders buys in and agrees and are excited about it, when you get to the congregation, pretty much you're already 90% there, right?
Yeah.
Everybody who's doing anything or making any decisions this year, you've already agreed to it. But giving that time and process is going to honor the people, make them, it's going to validate them, and it's going to encourage them, and it's going to allow them to not just hear it, but own it. And that's really important.
I'm going to comment on a couple of things there. One is you're kind of the default definition of that second ring is mid-level leaders or second level leaders. I also like to include in that group any key stakeholders or key influencers in the church, whether they're leading or not. Because you realize any, especially smaller churches, you recognize that there are people who carry a lot of weight and their opinion, their thoughts are going to influence others, whether they're actually leading anything or not.
That's awesome, because especially in a revitalization situation, because typically you're dealing with an older congregation and you would have people who have served for years and years and years in ministry. They might have served for 40 years teaching Sunday school or as an elder or whatever, but now they're older. And they don't have the energy to do it, but they still have significant influence. So even though they're not technically serving in any capacity per se, they definitely have serious influence in what's going to go on. And that's really important to include them. I think that's a great piece.
It's best advice if your goal is to follow the leading that the Lord is giving you on the revitalization of your church and at the same time maintaining unity.
Yeah.
The best thing that a pastor can do is plan a slow, deliberate, communicative and with process with a feedback loop so that he's hearing back from people and having good conversation. The other alternative is that you just barrel through it and you're going to get to the end of it and you're going to have a great idea and a great plan, but nobody with you to implement it, right? You're going to be standing
there
alone.
Or two people,
right? And you're not going to be able to accomplish
it. Your mother and your
wife and your three kids. Like, that's all that's left with you. They had no choice whether you were casting a great vision or not. There's a recent episode of this podcast. It's actually episode number 8. And at the time that we're recording this, Nathan has not even heard that podcast episode, so this is going to be new to him. I recently interviewed Dr. David Hsu, who is the a pastor in a church in Houston that was a Chinese church. Okay. And 10, 15 years into his ministry there, he began to feel a need for the church being more culturally connected to people in their community that were not Chinese. And he began to start to try to cast a vision for his primary leaders on how they could be a church that was reaching more people, not just Chinese people in their community. And in his first meeting, and he shares this in the podcast episode, in his first meeting with his primary leaders, they did not love the idea. They weren't with him. And so rather than trying to just, you know,
bully it
through, he pressed pause, went back. It took him several years before he came back to do it again. But in those few years between the first time he brought it up with the church and the next time, you know, he introduced it, he had already started to subtly lay some groundwork and do some things that were beginning to shift the culture in the church so that there was a more receptive, that people would be more receptive to this particular idea. Now, in a church revitalization scenario, you might not have years to work people towards getting where you want them or need them to be. But your best plan is always going to be to do the best that you can, to take the time that you need to get unity at each level. Now, unity is not the same thing as, what's the big word that I'm thinking about? Not everyone is necessarily
unanimous.
Going to agree 100% unanimous. That's the word. being unified is not necessarily the same thing as being unanimous, because you may have some people or a person or two that, that are holdbacks, that aren't necessarily with you. And you're going to have to figure out what level of lack of unanimousness you're willing to live with to move forward, and who those people are, and what the risk is in moving forward without their buy-in. You know, you use the Sunday school teacher example.
Yeah.
If by doing this, if you introduce this and you brought that Sunday school teacher into that mid-level leaders thing, and you sense that that Sunday school leader is the only holdout in the decision that's being made, but it has the potential of splitting the church down the middle,
Yeah.
You better think twice about the timing in which you move forward. It doesn't mean that you don't.
And I would also say, Bart, on top of that, like what you're saying is excellent, because oftentimes, you know, we're focusing on getting everybody to say yes to it. And that's not really possible. I mean, maybe in some places it's happened, but yeah. In most situations, it's just not reasonable. But we want to show people respect and kindness. You know, we do have a plan. We do have, you know, you're probably there because God's called you and you really sense God's leadership moving this forward. But he also cares about these people. And just because they don't agree with you doesn't mean they're dumb or stupid or whatever. It may mean that they are stuck in a way of thinking that was a long time ago, and that right. They have a hard time seeing something new. But that's part of leading them is so sometimes we can beat the sheep because we're not leading them effectively. So, but there are some difficult sheep along the way as well. Right. Yeah, I would also say to you, you know, one of the things I do when I'm working with leaders is I ask them to write down all the key people in the church that have influence. And then I want them to write another list of, okay, who are the ones in this list that you think will, you'll have no problem moving towards a vision and are excited about a new future? And who are the people in this list who likely will be challenged by anything new that's coming their way? And so oftentimes what we'll do is sometimes that list is really short. There's only like two people, but they have significant influence. Or it can be a little bit longer, like five or six people that will be a challenge. So sometimes we have to go and actually engage those people individually and privately, because we also would set up with the churches. We say, okay, this meeting today, because I'm going to do a process. This first meeting today, I'm going to have like, well, the same I'm going to do with the mid-level leaders. Our elders are all agreed. We're going to go to the mid-level leaders. We're going to communicate this vision. We're aware that these three or four folks may be a challenge. So in that first meeting, we're going to say, well, this is just an information meeting. This is not we haven't made a decision. We're excited about it and we want to move forward to it. But we want to give it to you guys to process and get your feedback before we move ahead. So, but this is just an information meeting. So give the information, do the meeting, but then I would have another time where people can come and actually talk to the elders or the individuals and schedule that so they can actually come and interact and give their feedback, but not necessarily in a group context, because sometimes you can have some people be a little bit challenging in the group meeting that you weren't expecting, or you can actually go and meet with them individually before the meeting and make sure you kind of know where they are and give them the encouragement to consider how they're going to operate. I also like to set the tone. So the tone for me is really important in these communications, because we're not trying to shove stuff down people's throat. We're not trying to make people do what they don't want to do. We're seeking the Lord and asking him for what he wants us to do as a church. And we're moving forward together as men of God who've been praying and seeking the Lord together on it. And we want to engage in a way that's helpful and meaningful and gracious. So that's really important.
Yeah. I think, you know, the thing that's so important in this is, we'll just keep harping on this over and over again, is that our goal is to maintain unity in the church.
Yeah.
Without unity, we're not going to be able to accomplish the things that God is calling us to accomplish. We're not going to be able to get where we dream of being. And in order to move people from where they are to where they need to be, they need to have a very clear picture of that preferred future. This is a vision discussion and one that I'm sure that we'll dive in more deeply on in another podcast episode.
Yeah.
But you can't just roll out the, hey, we've decided we're going to do this. There has to be a picture painted for people that demonstrates where we believe God is leading us as a church. And when we start with the vision, the preferred future, where we really think we could be, I mean, you know, in a lot of churches that we get to work with, I use this language. I'm like, imagine what it would be like if we actually had kids running around this building or out on our playground after the services on Sunday morning. We haven't had young children or small children in our nursery. We haven't had any kids in our children's ministry, or haven't been that many in quite some time. Imagine what it would be like if we were there.
Imagine what it would be like to actually use the baptismal tank.
Yeah, exactly. What would it be? Imagine what it would be like. Well, in order for us to get there, there are some things that we're going to need to consider making some shifts and some changes in. And it's in that season that you begin to lay out the reasons, maybe some of the things that you're doing or not doing are preventing you from actually being able to get there, which is how you cast that vision for the future. Now, again, different conversation for a different day, but when you're having those meetings, that meeting with your elders to cast the vision for them, meeting with the little mid-level leaders, and certainly the meeting with the full congregation, it can't simply be a what conversation. It has to be a why conversation. It really has to go into
what we believe God is going to lead us. 100%.
Yeah.
And I want to say it one more time is the people you're talking to love their church or they wouldn't be there.
Right.
We hopefully love Jesus too, but we definitely love their church. And so, we're trying to lead them. We're not trying to command them. We're leading them. And so it's really important to slow down and be gracious and kind because you're going to benefit so much more if the people feel loved, appreciated, and included, and then they own the vision that you're engaging them in, they're going to push on that vision. Not only are they going to hear, give you permission to do it, which I've seen that happen where they have a meeting and they say, everybody says yes, and they just kind of sit back and watch the leader do his thing and hopefully he succeeds, but we know we'll let him do it. You don't want people just to let you do it. You want them to be excited to participate with you to help push that rock up the hill because the rock is pretty heavy. And so I see some leaders are so eager for all the change that God's put in their heart to do. And all the change they want to do is awesome. And like, it's amazing what their plan is and their vision. And they're seeing the people is in the way. No, the people are actually the vehicle to help you succeed at this. And so, you know, slow down, be respectful, think about it, you know, in a bigger picture and give yourself more time to process the whole thing. I think it's really important to consider.
When you're moving people through these kinds of changes and you're having these conversations, I think you hit on something that I'll double down on here. And that is you can't underestimate the value of one-on-one meetings, especially with the longtime members, key stakeholders in the church. And there's always a tension for a church revitalizer in how much time and attention is given towards the people who have called him to be their pastor and the people in the community who are not yet saved and following Jesus. And you know, for those of us who tend to be wired a little bit more evangelistically, it can be easy to, you know, run around the people who called us to be their pastor versus giving them the time and the intention and the shepherding and the love that they really need to get where they need to go. But I believe that you honor Jesus most sincerely when you recognize that Jesus died to save the lost, but he's called a church for the saved. And you are a pastor of a church, in addition to being an evangelist and a missionary with the gospel. It's a both and you have to live in that world and you have to live in that tension. And it is tricky, but it's in this season that if you want your church to be most effective at its evangelistic efforts, you're going to have to be a great shepherd in the process to get your people there.
Now, you want your people excited about what's happening and they're involved and they're committed to it and they're shouldering the load and they're telling all their friends. Because they're just motivated. They're not just participating or letting it happen, but they're actually fully engaged. And they're inviting their friends. And they're also helping to advocate for you or the other people in the church who maybe are having challenges because they're so excited about what could be happening here. They want to, you know, hey, Jim, get off your stuff here. Let's go. And, you know, stop being a grumpy pants. Like, you know, you want to see that. But I just want to encourage, like, there's some guys who move too slow. Like, they're moving too slow. But most of the guys that are doing this kind of work, they move way too fast. And they're seeing the people as in the way of the vision that they believe God's called them to. And it's awesome that they have vision, but they have to slow down and think about how am I leading these people towards a unified movement to get this done together? And boy, that's much more exciting. Now, along the way, when you're making change at any level, you're going to lose people. People aren't going to like it. And there'll be people who will be, you know, resisting it. But in the end of the day, the more people you can take with you who are excited to do it together, you're going to have much more results and it's going to be a lot more fun along the way. So,
yeah, I believe it was Mark Clifton, who's Southern Baptist church revitalization guru. I've learned so much from him over the years. And he said, the most effective church revitalizer has the ability to always exercise tactical patience.
Yes.
You have to be tactical. You have to be strategic. You have to look for the right time to strike, the right time to move, but you have to be patient in the process. And the primary reason for the patience is to make sure that you maintain unity in the church. Most important thing there. Let's land the plane on this thing. Any last things that you don't think that we've fully fleshed out here, Nathan, before we wrap this one up?
Well, I just want to reiterate what I just said, really, because that's the we're dealing with a lot of revitalizers, and I just find them way too eager, and that's why, you know, in the conversation I'm communicating probably a little too heartily, but you know, I think we just want to slow it down and think process, make a communication plan when you meet with your elder team and you come up with a thing that you guys all agree to. How big is this thing you guys are deciding? How many people it's going to impact? And do we have a communication plan? Don't just assume that you can just announce it and now move. You want the body excited about the changes that are happening and participating fully into that. And have that as your outcome in your mind, not just the change you're looking for, but that everybody's on board and excited about it. That's also part of the vision that you're trying to get to.
Yeah. If you are listening to this podcast and you are one of those high D type A personality leaders, the thing that makes you so gifted at the potential work of revitalizing a church can also be the greatest weakness that you have as a leader. And you have to really learn to live within who you are and who God has made you to be, at the same time exercising those shepherd gifts. Even if the shepherding gifts are not your primary gifts, through a revitalization season, it's going to be really important that you maybe grow in those a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes. I'm going to leave you, Nathan, and our guests with a piece of scripture, because we know that Jesus prayed that his body, his church, would be unified, that his disciples Absolutely. Would be unified. But Paul the Apostle also made a great appeal to this in 1 Corinthians 1:10. He says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree with one another in what you say, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought. Your mind and your thought is your vision. It's your direction. It's where you're going. And Paul appealed to the church in Corinth, and we're going to appeal to all the churches in America, North America, that might be listening to this, that you are perfectly united in mind and thought in where the Lord is leading you and the impact that you can make in your community.
Amen.
Thanks so much for tuning into another episode of the podcast. If this has been helpful for you, please share it with someone that you know, someone that you love, someone that might be able to benefit from it. And don't forget to leave us a rating and a review wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, because that feeds the algorithmic machine and more people can then find the podcast. Thanks again for tuning in to the Revitalize My Church podcast.